When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome everybody to another brand new episode of It's My Wrestling Podcast Indie Spotlight Series. I, of course, as always, I'm your host, Chris Dees. Before I get started, as always, please make sure you hit subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube and hit follow if you're listening on audio platforms. Today's guest is a man I'm very excited to speak to. You may recognize him after a few appearances here and there over the years on WWE TV, including an infamous match against Zack Ryder, which I'm sure we're going to get to, as well as appearing on MTV's True Life. He is the one and only Rapid Delivery, Mr. Rory Fox, man. Thank you so much for joining me, Rory. How's it going?
Hey, I'm doing great. After our interview, I'll make sure I subscribe.
Yes, yes, please do. Yeah, I think I like to think that my guests have all subscribed. I would hope so anyway. Like, I'd be really insulted if they haven't. But no, man, like I say, thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join me on this new series. You are my third guest on the indie series now. Trying to shine a bit of a spotlight on the unsung heroes of the industry. To be maybe, even though you've been doing it for a long time, like what, 22 years, I think, 21 years?
Yeah, pretty close, yeah.
Something like that. So, like, I like to think people will at least still be familiar with you. As I said, you've worked in a lot of different promotions, done appearances here and there. So I'm sure there's people that are going to recognize you. But the first thing that I want to do, I want to go right back to the start, obviously, how you pretty much became known back then, which was, as I said in the intro, MTV True Life, I'm a Pro Wrestler, the series that sort of like got you into the public eye a little bit. How did that come about? Like, how did that opportunity arise for you? Because obviously a lot of the guys in that were known, weren't they? They were, I wouldn't say huge megastars, but some of them were really well-known wrestlers. So how did that come about for you?
Being from the Midwest, you know, in Iowa, back in 1998, there wasn't a training center on every corner. So I had to do my research. I had to look into Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and I got this little booklet from Larry Sharp about the inner workings of professional wrestling. And I saw a list of training schools, and I saw like Massachusetts and California. And then I saw Les Thatcher School in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I was like, wow, I could drive there. Let me come check this place out. And of all the schools I contacted, Les was actually the only one that got on the phone and like talked to me, and he answered all my stupid Mark questions, and he listened to every one of them. And me and my dad took a drive out to Cincinnati, and I felt it was a good fit for me right away from the training facility. And then I did some research on Les. He had been around, you know, 40 years in the business, and was a professional wrestler for 20 some years of it. And then he did broadcasting, everything else. And him being like 5'8", I was like, if he had a 20 some year career, he obviously was successful and he knew what he was doing. So it's like, I better go out to Cincinnati.
And so when the show came about, obviously, I think I read something that somebody else had to pull out, or MTV didn't want to go down that route. There was somebody else that was giving problems. So how did they end up then selecting you?
Yeah, the person that was featured on it wasn't him pulling out. It was MTV like saying, we got to get out of this disaster like right away. The one that was featured, his name was Matt Taglia, and I guess they were going to go through the training steps and have him debut in a battle royal. And after 2 weeks of training, he just stopped going. He was out partying. I was his babysitter a couple times. You know, he's out in the clubs every night. And I think he even pawned off the camera that they were having him in his room. Like back in the days of Real World, you didn't use your phone. You had a camera that you would talk to and record everything for footage. And I guess he ended up pawning that off at one point. And just bad news. He's from Chicago. He had the silver spoon every day. It was wonderful. And finally MTV is like, we got to salvage this. It's like, we'll do a part of it with Matt, but we got to go another direction. And they interviewed all the different students at HWA. And for some reason, they liked my story, being from Watkins, Iowa, population 100, being a fan all my life. I worked in a factory for 2.5 years to save up for wrestling school, wherever I was going to go. And they pivoted to me. And it's like, so we saw some of my training steps and the preparation of getting ready for this first match. It's even on video. This was one take, myself and Les Thatcher going over what my gimmick was going to be and my name. I had a list of names, and the rest is history.
So when the show ended, what was life like for you, like, immediately after that? Did opportunities present itself? Did it lead to, do you know what I mean? Like, did it lead to promotions getting in touch, or did you just sort of focus on independence and sort of like developing your character more and your skills? Because you'd not been wrestling for long, had you, at that point?
Right. That was my debut.
Yeah.
And when it aired, let's see, I had my debut in May of 99, and I believe it aired in September on MTV. So yeah, I'd only been wrestling for a little while. But at that point, you know, I would get recognized at Walmart or the Tri-County Mall in Cincinnati, which, you know, that was cool, signing autographs. I believe I even did one autograph session with Al Snow at the height of his Al Snow in the Head gimmick at WWF. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, at that point, WWF was still so far from my mind. I was still just trying to grasp an understanding of professional wrestling. And I had some good veterans there to hold my hand and put me through these matches back in the day and correct things I was doing wrong. So yeah, WWF was so far from my mind at that point, at least a year of wrestling on the indies before I even thought anything like, oh, which maybe I should send in a tape just to be an extra or anything.
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah, you say some veterans in there, like anybody that was working on the show. And obviously you've mentioned Les Thatcher in there. So I've got to ask, I know that he had Harley Race and Ricky Steamboat at his school, at his facility, helping out at various points. Did you ever get an opportunity to work with either of those?
Oh, absolutely. I was a part of a 3-day camp with Les Thatcher, Harley Race, and Ricky Steamboat. It was a great seminar, and I actually got to witness a Ricky Steamboat hot comeback. He would grab one of the wrestlers from our shows and take him in the ring and like, oh, okay, kids, I understand this is you guys showing fire. I'll show you fire. This is what you should be doing when you finally make your hot comeback. Not going through the motions. I mean, he's like, do anything you got to do, the hookah chuka, everything. Just, I want, like Les would say, I want fire shooting out of your ass. You're so fired up to make your comeback and try to win your match. And you've been getting beat up by this no good bad guy for 10 minutes. It's like, it's time to shine. And I got to see the whole Ricky Steamboat comeback, the double chops, arm drags, a drop kick. That was amazing. But also at that seminar, we had a Halloween show and Harley was there for that. And this was a couple years later. It wasn't like my first year there. And I was a heel later on, and after I turned heel, I called myself the original MTV superstar. I got so far away from that damn newspaper boy gimmick. And it's like the successes went to my head. And anyway, I got to judge a Halloween contest, and it was between this hot girl and this little boy. And I picked the hot 18-year-old girl. The whole crowd booed, and Harley goes, I don't like that. Don't do that shit. But anyway, the camp was just tremendous. Having Steamboat, Les, and Harley all in one place was wow.
Yeah, man. That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, there can't be many people that have trained or worked, even if it was just for a seminar, a 3-day seminar. Like, you must be one of a select few people that have had the opportunity to work with three of the greats. I mean, Steamboat, one of the absolute greats. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe they took that seminar on the road up the East Coast and some other places. So If you ask around, there are some different wrestlers out there that got to be a part of those seminars, which were so valuable.
I can't believe he didn't like you picking the girl and getting that cheap heat. Like, that seems like a Harley race thing.
Well, it's just when Harley was old, he was like a really nice guy, and it's like he kind of didn't like that kind of cheap heat anymore.
Fair enough. Back in his day, he would have definitely done that.
Yeah, he didn't like me making a kid cry. that wouldn't be the first kid either in all my years of wrestling, let me tell you.
And yet MJF does it now, and everybody seems to think that that's great. So
I mean, that was like me 15 years ago, but it's like I could never take it to that level with the F-bombs and everything. It's so great. I love MJF so much. I appreciate what he does.
Absolutely, that is probably the best heel in the game at the minute. You mentioned rapid delivery a couple of times. Like, where did the idea come from? That did anybody else help you like brainstorm ideas, or was that just because it's not the most common of gimmicks, is it? I know, no. Sort of like the 80s and 90s were more. You don't really get occupation gimmicks anymore, do you? Like back then, you had like Repo Man, you had Big Boss Man, and IRS and guys like that. You don't really get those gimmicks anymore. So what was your sort of like inspiration for that?
You got to understand, back in that era, they don't really do it now, but in that era, when you're coming right out of training school, you have no idea what your personality is. So the best way to do it, if you look at any good wrestlers in the past, they all had some type of gimmick to start. I mean, look at even Edge was part of a vampire crew and other things. But no, just not just any comparison there at all. But when you first start out, you need a gimmick. You can't just be, "Hi, everybody, I'm Rory Fox." And I just come out in my plank trunks and boots. I mean, they do it now all the time. But back then, you had to have a gimmick. And then once, maybe a year or two into it, you start to kind of figure out who you are. And then you kind of become yourself. But in the beginning, you're just getting out there just to get on the show and get out of the damn training center, wrestle in front of fans. So, okay, give me a gimmick so I can get out there and wrestle. But how ours came about was I saw a movie with Brandon Lee called Rapid Fire. And I'm like, that's the name. I want to be Rapid Fire. So now I got to think up. I had a list of names with an R and a list of names with F. And it's on MTV. I hand this list to Les, and he reads down the list. But it's like, these are just names. They're not written across like that. But he goes, Ricky Fury, Rob Faith, and all this stuff. Maybe Rory Fox. So, and he goes, how about a happy medium? I know you want to be rapid fire in this wrestler, but, and we've been teasing you, you look a little bit like Opie from Mayberry. So I was thinking, how about we combine the rapid with a newspaper boy? So you're going to be rapid delivery, Rory Fox. And I'm on TV like, yeah, that's great. Because I was not about to bury myself first day in the business and be like, I'm going to argue with a guy with 40 years in the business. Oh, I don't like that. What's Hulk say? That doesn't work for me, brother. I wasn't about to do that on MTV.
He could have just suggested anything at that point, and you would have been like, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, only if I knew then what I know now, yeah, I could say that doesn't work for me, brother, and then be a heel. But no, I was going to be a babyface, so I wasn't about to get all this heat from the start.
That's a really good point, though. Like, you can come out these days, not to like disrespect any wrestlers, because every wrestler out in the world, you've got to respect the craft and the hard work they put in, but yeah. there's definitely a lot less character work these days than there was in, like, there's not really many larger than life characters anymore. Even somebody like Hulk Hogan, who really just had the blonde hair, the mustache, and the trunks, he was still larger than life, wasn't he, even without having a particular gimmick. So I can completely understand where you're coming from. It's just a shame that that's gone. I really liked those like occupational, what was another one I'm thinking of, Isaac Yankum, Kane, when he was a dentist. They were everywhere. Everywhere you looked, they had these proper gimmicks, and I loved it, man. So I mentioned at the start, obviously you've made some appearances here and there for WWE and that, and I've got to ask, and I'm sure you get asked about this all the time, and I'm sorry if you're sick to death of talking about it, the Zack Ryder incident. I only recently actually came across the footage of that, and I know it sort of happens in the ring where your pants get ripped off. And even even knowing what I was about to watch, because I'd searched for it, even knowing what was going to happen, I was still confused and surprised as to it actually happening. So can you please explain for my benefit and everybody else, like how did your pants rip off so easily? For anybody who hasn't watched it, Zack Ryder basically pulls you by the pants, doesn't he? Pretty much by the crotch into the corner.
Pull the trunks into the turnbuckle.
But your pants just rip, don't they? I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah, they sure did. If you would have seen the trunks, they were stitched a completely different way than any other seamstress would ever do them.
Right.
But here's the thing, though. My whole career, I guess I wore K&H top quality gear from Ohio, and then the other Matt Stryker, not the school teacher, the other Matt Stryker that was at HWA and also in Ring of Honor, and that he made trunks and they were really great. And at one point I got away from them and took a chance on this young lady that was making trunks. And see, I was so used to wearing top-notch quality gear. I know it's a big no-no in wrestling, but I never did it. I never wore underwear under my trunks because I always had these double thick spandex trunks from K&H and then Matt Stryker. But I took a chance on this young lady, and I wore these trunks for the 3 years I lived in Texas. I wore them all over, but I guess that day, and they were pleather trunks. So I guess that day they had had enough. But the trunks, usually the seams, they're sewn on the sides together.
Yeah.
This one, for some reason, had the seam line at the below the crotch. And when Matt Cardona, he's Zack Ryder then, but I'll say Matt Cardona now. Matt Cardona pulled my trunks. They just went completely up. And, you know, you can say it was faulty trunks, but at the same time, this is a greenhorn Zack Ryder, Matt Cardona, that I don't think knew what the hell he was even doing. That's great, kid. You're under developmental, but that doesn't mean you know everything yet. Yeah, you know, he got signed out of the Indies after like 1 year, and, you know, he's in the developmental for a couple of years. But when he pulled my trunks, though, and I'll take this till the day I die, he pulled my trunks when we're in the middle of the ring. I wasn't even near the corner yet. This is a spot that's been done for 50 years in wrestling. The heel, cowardly heel, backs off and then pulls the trunks, and the babyface hits the turnbuckle. Yeah. But because this is WWE and Rory Fox, who's been around over 10 years, is extra talent, by God, we can't let him do enough forearm strikes to actually make Matt Cardona go to the corner to do the spot. We're in the middle of the ring, and he sold two punches, and then he pulls on my trunks, and we're nowhere near the corner. And he pulls as hard as he can and takes like a back bump. And yeah, the trunks went boop. He can say they were made of dust, but, you know, maybe his skill levels were made of dust at that time.
Like he does literally drag you like halfway across the ring. And I was like, what's he doing? What's he doing it from there?
And everyone blames me just because, well, he should have had underwear under his trunks. Well, guess what? Even if I would have had underwear under my trunks, it still would have been flapping everywhere. And then you would have seen underwear hanging too. So either way, Matt, you should have allowed the extra talent to drive you further to the corner instead of trying to be Mr. No-Sell. Because if you go back and look at that damn footage, Matt Cardona was a pretty skinny guy then, so he can sell some forearms.
Yeah, absolutely. When would that have been? Sort of like, well, it was ECW, wasn't it? So like 2006, 2007, that sort of
yeah,
time?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, I understand it. You know, he's away from the edgeheads thing. This may have been his second or third match on ECW, and he's still trying to find his way. He's working extra talent to get over his gimmick and, you know, get over his moves, but it wouldn't hurt. Maybe he would have got heat for selling too much for me by,
yeah.
Well, you gave that extra talent guy four forearms when we told you one, you know, it's like, but whatever.
What was, I've seen you sort of go back and forth every now and then, don't you, on social media about it. I think it wasn't too long ago. You still sort of argue about it every now and then. Is it all just in good fun? Like, did he apologize when it happened?
Yeah, he apologized years later, but he doesn't realize how upset I was about it. When he went on Talk is Jericho, him and Chris Jericho laughed their ass off for 10 minutes at my expense. I'm in Chris Jericho's book as well about it. And they took great enjoyment in just laughing, you know, at my expense. And I let them know how much it bothered me. And it got me on Talk as Jericho. And I got to clear the air with Chris Jericho too. It was great.
Sorry, carry on.
We do things now in the Major Figure Podcast. I don't know if you follow that at all. I mean, if you don't collect figures, you might not know, but we still have interaction on that. But on my birthday, every birthday, he still likes to crack his jokes and show that picture of my ass hanging out on the apron. But see, this year, though, because we don't get along, this year he put, oh, sorry, not sorry, Rory Fox. Happy birthday. But he also likes to take these shots at me, like, oh, you're old or this and that. It's like, because I never had a WWE contract, it's like I'm over the hill. But if you're a WWE legend, it's perfectly acceptable to keep wrestling, which I think is total bullshit. And I think it's ageism. If you have the skills to go yet, it shouldn't matter how old you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been sort of like a hot button topic recently, hasn't it? Because Vince has put out a thing saying that he doesn't want to sign women, I think 25 or over, something like that. Ageism has been a really big argument in the last couple of weeks, but I completely agree.
What's her name from NXT? Taya, what was she, Frankie Monet there?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, like she's considered too old and she had better mic skills than any of them on there, you know?
Better in-ring skills as well. She's one of the best women's wrestlers in the world. Has been for a number of years. I completely agree. Look at somebody like Edge. Doesn't matter how old you are, Edge is approaching 50. I think Bobby Lashley is 45 or 46, something like that.
If you think about it, really, do you think maybe it's with Vince? It's like if he sees young people around him all the time, then he's still young. But if he sees older wrestlers, it's like him looking in the mirror and it's like a reminder. But if I'm around all 25-year-old NXT people, then everything. I don't know. I'm starting to think that a little bit. I don't know why he's so anti-age.
Maybe, yeah. I don't think I'd be that way. If I'm 32, I've managed coffee shops and things like that in like my day job, and a lot of the kids who work there are sort of like 16, 17, 18, and that doesn't make me feel young. It makes me realize I'm twice their age.
Or how stupid they act or their behavior. Now you can't tolerate it. You're like, oh my God.
did you ever speak to the lady who made the trunks afterwards?
I never spoke to her again, no.
Oh.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm not surprised. I don't really blame you, but that's fair enough.
I mean, she did go on to some successful things. It wasn't creating gear, but she ended up being the Ring of Honor Women's Champion. If you think about it.
Who are we talking about? I'm trying to think who.
2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, I'm going to have to look into this because I don't even know the name of who it was that made the.
She was married to BJ Whitmer.
Doesn't ring any bells. I'm going to Google it afterwards.
She used to make wrestling trunks, but you know, getting training from BJ, she turned into a really good wrestler at Ring of Honor.
Oh man, I'm really intrigued now. I am going to Google it straight away. As soon as you go today, I'm going to be straight on my phone Googling it.
But hey, to her benefit too, you know, I was friends with the guy she was dating at the time back then. It was one of those where I don't know. I don't even know if I gave her any money for it, but I was like, hey, this is going to be on WWE television, you know, the whole brother bullshit. So, hey, whatever happened. The gear looked really nice. I wore it all over Texas. So, unfortunately, it just ripped when I happened to be on national television, you know. those trunks got me through many shows in Texas when fans were spitting on me and throwing drinks at me and everything else.
Right, let's talk about the other side of WWE then, because you've made a few other appearances, faced a legendary Haku. Like that's that's massive. And you had a good couple of minute long match with him, didn't you, against Haku? What was that experience like? Did you have any concerns going into that? Because obviously he's known for being one of the most brutal, one of the toughest, one of the stiffest wrestlers probably ever. Like, what was that experience like for you? Did you have any worries at all?
Yeah, I was scared of him. When I was a kid, I saw him at Clash of Champions in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I was front row to watch Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair, the rematch, for the WCW Championship. Ming was a bodyguard then. This is the night Dusty Rhodes broke a chair over his head and he no-sold it, and he's Tongan death gripping Dusty Rhodes. And it's like all these years later, I'm like, well, and the other thing was, is I saw this guy when I was 6 years old at a WWF house show in Cedar Rapids, and when he was King Tonga. And I didn't know what to expect, but then I had talked to him. He was so soft-spoken and just very cool. And it goes back to that. If you don't make Haku angry, he's the most wonderful guy in the world. And I was so lucky. This was still the era when they still had syndicated matches. Because if this would have been Monday Night Raw, it wouldn't have been a four-minute match. It would have been 1 minute, no offense, which that happened to me years later against Umaga on Monday Night Raw. But anyway, back to this date in 2001, I had already left Cincinnati. I moved home, and Kevin Kelly was in charge of booking extra talent. And Les Thatcher had never gotten me any WWF opportunities. I depended on him to like send in stuff, but he's old school. He's like, I won't send stuff in until I feel you're ready, because it's my reputation if you perform poorly, which they're like, fine. I moved back home. I'm home for 2 months. I send stuff in. Kevin Kelly booked me for Minneapolis and Grand Forks, South Dakota. So big shout out to Kevin Kelly for taking a chance on me and giving me that opportunity. And a big thank you to Tony Garea for booking me in that match. Tony Garea was around ringside looking for extra talent. They had this board you'd write all the matches on, and I'm over there out of the corner of Tony's eye doing Hindu squats. And and Tony goes, you don't mind getting beat up, do you? Like, no, sir. So anyway, I got selected against Haku. And Haku was so nice. He let me hit a missile dropkick. Here I am, this 24-year-old kid, 20,000 people, and I get to hit a missile dropkick on Haku. We had a little back and forth in the match as well. And it's probably still my favorite moment ever. And the great part was, is I just saw Haku a couple weeks ago in Belleville, Illinois. And I just thank him every time I see him. And it's so wonderful just chatting with him. I actually took a photo. This is the 20th anniversary of our match. So I thought it was fitting that we got another a picture together. So
very, very cool. Like, I was going to say, like, I imagine of anything that you've done in the last 22 years, surely that's got to be up there.
And here's the other crazy part, you know, the way pro wrestling world is so crazy. Haku and Barbarian were the faces of fear in WCW. Yeah. And I've wrestled both of them. And it's so cool. Whenever I see Barbarian now, I say, hey, Barb. And he goes, Rory, and gives me a big hug. It's like, I get hugs from the Barbarian. I watched him in 1988 wrestle the Road Warriors in the Five Season Center at a Superstars of Wrestling TV. It just blows my mind, you know?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. No, I completely understand. Yeah, absolutely. It would do. Yeah. It would do for anybody. But you've not just had the match with Ryder, and you know, you said Umaga there. There was Heidenreich as well. You've beaten Snitsky, Gene Snitsky as well. Like, that's a good few opportunities, a good few, like, five or six matches, I think.
I wrestled Stevie Richards in Corpus Christi, in Houston, on ECW. You know, that was another great opportunity.
Yeah, so like, the thing that I'm always curious about is, A, first of all, like, how do these opportunities come about? I know a lot of them go to like local talent and indie talent and people that are just there as extras and stuff like that. But you've had like half a dozen, like five or six matches against established, well-known WWE superstars, and obviously Haku, an absolute legend. Like, so A, how did these opportunities keep coming about for you? How did they keep presenting themselves to you so many times? And why didn't we see you more? Because you were obviously known at this point. to be selected that many times. So was there ever any discussion for you to actually work for WWF, WWE?
From my understanding years ago, the best opportunity for me to get signed was around 2001 because they brought back Tough Enough. And I was that connection by being on MTV. That was the front runner, the forerunner to Tough Enough, because Kevin Kelly even said in the commentary, who's the next Rory Fox in the making? Tough Enough is a new series debuting on MTV.
Yeah.
So I understand Kevin Kelly was trying to help me get signed, but otherwise though, I just kept going back as extra talent, and they just select, it depends where you're at. Like say, if I'm in Iowa, I can get booked in Minnesota, Missouri, Illinois, you know, Kansas, but you have to wait till they come back around that area. It's not like, oh, hey, Kevin, can I work your California shows? It's like, no, they got people there. They got people everywhere. Now, if I was 6'3", maybe they'd been like, okay, we'll fly in somewhere. We want to take a look at you. But, you know, being 5'9", you got to be I'm mixing up names. You got to be Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, if you're going to get signed at 5'9", unless you have just charisma coming out the ass, or you just spit this amazing promo. You know, I was one of those guys. I was a good hand, but I wasn't special enough. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. If WCW would have stayed around, I believe it 100% in my heart, I would have been in that WCW cruiserweight division, because after Chris Jericho left, they were missing that really annoying charismatic heel that just raises hell. And I know I could have been part of that division. But when you get to WWE, I can't tell you how many times I was there when John Laurinaitis was in charge of signing people. I would walk by him and he'd be on his cell phone. I swear to God, I don't think he was always taking a phone call. I think when he saw short guys, like, fuck, I better get my phone out. I don't even want to talk to these guys. Because if you're not his height, he doesn't care. Now, the other time I may have had a shot was when Tommy Dreamer was in there. You know, that's how Matt Cardona got signed, was Mikey Whipwreck trained Cardona. But the thing is, Cardona and Myers are good looking guys, which I don't blame them for signing them, because they were like 18, 19, and they're already pretty good kids.
Yeah.
But you have to have some kind of N or B, just an exceptional talent. But that's the thing, you know, I did a lot of tapings in Texas. I didn't always get to wrestle. One time I was dressed up as a security guard when the Dudley Boys were invading the building because ECW was coming back, you know, Paul. It's like, I was like, they're coming. One time me, Jimmy Jacobs, and these other guys, we were security guards for the contract signing of Triple H versus Batista, Hell in the Cell.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's just all cool little things. You don't always get to wrestle, but you always get to be booked. But I will share this thing. That was the closest thing I ever got to seeing what it was like experiencing a Triple H entrance. It's like I'm in the ring watching Triple H walk down to the ring with that championship, hearing his theme song. It's like, oh, my God, I got goosebumps.
What's so here's another thing that I'm curious about then, especially for somebody that's not a part of WWE, somebody who's just in for the day or for a couple of days for a recording or whatever. What is a WWE TV day like? Like what's it like backstage? Is it chaotic? Is it all hands on deck? Do you have to be ready at all times? Because I know in recent times it sounds chaotic. Vince McMahon ripping up scripts an hour before the show and then rewriting the scripts and stuff like that. But what was it like on your appearances? Was everybody friendly enough? Did you speak to anybody in management? Was it, what was the, just the sort of atmosphere like?
Well, it was just being extra talent. I mean, I was there at one time when we were actually all in the same locker room, but years later, the extra talent's in just some kind of little closet and little room. We would never be near anything like the Vince McMahon writing up scripts, ripping up scripts and all that. Yeah. It's just pretty much, I think all the boys show up at 2, but extra talent, they tell us to be there at like noon. So we go hit catering first. Then we put on our gear and we're just down by the ring, just hanging out the ring all day. Maybe Arn Anderson, Jamie Noble, or whoever will tell you get in the ring and just wrestle around 5 minutes. Or say one of the WWE guys want to work on a new move or they got something they want to do. It's like, okay, bring that guy in here so I can do it. I've seen times where one of the local talents, he was the biggest guy. So okay, put him in the ring with Umaga. We want to see what he's got. And 2 minutes in, he kept screwing stuff up. And then he stiffed Umaga. It's like, oh, get out of the ring. And then that was it for the rest of us for the day. It just varies. Some days they have more time to put on matches before TV than there's other days you won't even get in the ring. But the thing is you just need to be in your gear and be around ringside. Just be ready.
Yeah, just be ready just in case. Interesting. No, I just always wonder because we've all got this sort of like image in our head of being there for like 14, 16 hours, being there for the whole day. And just, it sounds like chaos, but I've spoken to some people who are just like, no, it's just like a normal day. It's just,
I couldn't imagine now because I'm way before the 3 hour Raws. It's like, if I get there at noon and Raw doesn't get over till after 10 o'clock, I was like, oh, that is a long ass day. And you have to be on your toes all day and say hello to everyone. And it's just really awkward. Now I think they make you wear suits and just, get that.
Yeah. I read something today when The Rock was there a few years ago, bumped into all the cruiserweight guys like Mustafa Ali and all of those guys. And they were all just stood backstage completely like suited and booted in their finest suits. It's like really, really, really corporate now.
Yeah.
Seems like it was a lot more relaxed back in the day, but times have changed. That times have changed. But anyway, right. So we've spoken loads about what you've done. We've spoken loads about WWF, WWE. I want to know what you're up to now because you're still going now, aren't you? After, like I said, after 22 years, 21 years in the business. So what have you been doing recently? What have you got coming up soon?
Well, thankfully though, I took 4 years off because I can't guarantee I would still be wrestling today. In 2010, I had just had enough after the trunks being ripped off and WWE wouldn't book me anymore. And it's like, okay, do I just want to wrestle in front of 50 or 100 people? And some of those Des Moines crowds were really starting to irritate me. They were like booing me as a good guy and just like, do I really need this aggravation? I'm tired of being broke. So I didn't come back till 2014, and that's when things started going again. But like right now, I wrestle in Iowa. I'll do once a month up to Minnesota. I go to the St. Louis area once a month. I do some Kansas City. So I'm here in the Midwest. So I got my little loop that I like to do. I'm staying busy enough. I would always like to do more, but every now and then you'll see me be a part of the Major Wrestling Figure podcast or live shows. I did one show that they filmed in New York. Like I'm getting flown to New York for bookings to do their live shows or recorded shows that are going to premiere later. I've done 2 Talk and Shop of Manias. You know, I keep getting these little opportunities and I just make the best of them. And on the indies, you know, with me being one of the more veteran guys on the show, now I get that gift of wrestling the famous wrestlers from the 80s, 90s and all that. And, you know, I didn't get a contract, but things like that, I really enjoy. Just to give you a little bit of a list. So it's like, so to you people out there, like you may or may not get a WWE contract, but there are so many great things you get to do. I've wrestled Ricky Morton, Honky Tonk Man, The Barbarian, teamed with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Who else? I can't even think right now. But I've got to be a part of all these shows and wrestle legends. Oh yeah, I had a tag match against Gangrel here recently. I've wrestled the Hurricane. But it's like you get all these cool things, you know. It's like if you're a really good wrestler and you're known to be safe, you'll get to wrestle superstars you grew up watching. And that's some of the cool little things I get to do now.
Very, very cool. No, it is really cool. Like you say, I think people, especially younger kids trying to get into wrestling, think, oh, WWE is the be-all and end-all. Like, I have to get to the WWE. But I've spoken to loads of wrestlers that never made it to WWE, and a lot of them are happy that they didn't. We've seen how WWE has changed just in the last 5 years. The amount of talent that get cut left, right, and center. They've released, like, 71 or no, nearly 100, I think, in the last couple of years. All extremely talented people. Like, WWE shouldn't be the be-all and end-all. There's loads of promotions out there now. Loads of places you can be successful.
I mean, I understand it. I'm a weekend warrior. You know, I have to work a job during the week, but the weekends, I travel. I get in my car and I do my shows. And I love it. I sell a lot of merch. I do pretty well. It's not enough to be a full-time job, but I'm not losing money in professional wrestling. And that's the thing with Matt Cardona. You know, my moment's gone. You know, I'm not going to have a WrestleMania moment. I'm not going to get a WWE contract. I may not ever even wrestle for AEW, but I have Matt Cardona. One-on-one, one day, we're going to have that match. That's my WrestleMania moment. That's what keeps me going to the gym and staying in good shape, is because I want to keep wrestling. I feel good, and Matt Cardona can, you know, look down on me, but one of these days we're going to have that match, and you can call me old, and Brian Myers can say I suck, but guess what? One of these days we're going to get in the ring, and we're going to find out.
And you're going to rip his pants off.
Maybe that too.
Do it. But I would pay to see it.
I will get his respect.
Yeah, absolutely, man. No, I'd love to see that. I really would love to see it. Rory, man, thank you so much for joining me. You've been an absolute pleasure to talk to. I like to do this very last question for all of my guests on this new series. It's literally just called Putting Yourself Over. Like, just a few minutes to just sell yourself, anything you've got coming up, why people should be paying attention to you, even if, you know, if they did know you before or if they necessarily don't know you. Just let people know what's so good about Rory Fox and why they should be fans.
Well, if you see the heel version of Rory Fox, which could be up in Sioux City, Iowa, I don't wrestle like everyone else on TV today. It's like, I want to put on a great show for you. I want to make you mad. I want to make you stand up on your feet and just pray and wish that my opponent is going to kick Rory Fox's ass. Now, if you may see me in St. Louis, and I'll be like Bob Backlund. I love professional wrestling. I love my fans. I'm going to do my best to win. Whichever role you see Rory Fox in, you are going to get a show. It's not going to be a five-star. It's not going to be a five-star match, but it's going to be five-star enthusiasm from the fans and from me.
Can't ask for more than that. Cannot ask for more than that. Whether you like them or hate them, boo them or cheer them, all I care about is the wrestlers give their all to entertain us.
And you have to come to my show and see my micro brawler. I do have a micro brawler now.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that posted recently. Yeah, what was that like getting your?
Second. Let me get it for you. Sorry.
That must be the dream.
I should have already had it out here, but I apologize.
Very, very cool. Yeah, I've got a few micro brawlers from WrestleCrate, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So this is one positive out of the negatives of my trunks being ripped off on national television. If that wouldn't have happened, Matt Cardona probably wouldn't be talking to me today, and I wouldn't have any trading cards. I wouldn't have been part of FWF Live. So it's like this is one brilliant line that Vince McMahon has said. Let's turn a negative into a positive. So I've tried my best to turn this into a positive. I have trading cards. I have a micro brawler. Here I am now in 2021, you know, and I have these things. I have a pro wrestling tee store, and I'm also on Collar and Elbow, all because of I was given some opportunities. I made the best of them, you know. So it's just if you stick around long enough, you never know what can happen. You got to keep yourself in the game. I've also heard Macho Man say years ago, a wrestler told him, I'm going to quit. I'm getting out. And he goes, well, if you quit, you're out of the game. You got it. You're taking yourself out of the game if you quit.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask about the micro brawler. Like, that's got to be, obviously, WrestleMania is the main dream, but having your own action figure, that's pretty cool. I imagine that's the dream for a lot of wrestlers.
Well, I'm really hoping now the major wrestling figures, they have the little bendies from like the 90s of those WWF guys. Yeah, they have that. So maybe, just maybe, there might be a Rory Fox bendy, but Brian Myers already likes to joke the micro brawler is the first time, only time, but we'll see. Big Mouth, the most professional wrestler. I think he's the most professional asshole.
I'm gonna clip that. That's a quote. That's a beautiful quote. I'm going to clip that and put it on social media. Awesome. Rory, man, where can people find you on social media?
I am on Twitter. It's at Rory Fox _. Instagram, I'm usually putting some stuff on there. I usually share some of my promos on there. Rory Fox, Rory Fox 11 on Instagram. And I have a Rory Fox Facebook page. I'm on prowrestlingtees.com/RoryFox11. I also have a Collar and Elbow store, so check me out.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'll put links to all of that in the about section as well for all your social media and that sort of people can just click away and find their way there. Rory, it has been an absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me, so much for giving me your time. I really appreciate it. I'm loving speaking to you guys on this independent series. I think it's like I said at the start, it's important to give, you know, I don't have the biggest platform in the world, but if I can even just get eyes on you guys just by, I don't know, a couple hundred more people, then I feel like I've done a good service, because you guys work just as hard, if not harder, than a lot of the people that we see on the TV who've got these million-dollar facilities and all the tools to go and do whatever they need to do. And I respect the grind of independent wrestlers so much. So yeah, thank you so much for joining me, man. Everybody who has watched and listened, thank you so much. Like I said at the start, please hit subscribe, please hit follow wherever you're watching or listening this, and I'll hope to see you again next time on It's My Wrestling Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.